This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 397, brought to you by Eternal Warrior number 1 from Valiant Comics and iFanboy listeners like you.
If I could turn back time, if I could find a way, I'd take back those words that'll hurt you, and you'd stay.
Hey, welcome to the iFanboy Pick. That's already giggly. Pick of the Week podcast, episode 397. I am Josh Flanagan, coming to you from the heat. Joining me is Paul Montgomery.
What's up, players?
Is it temperate where you are?
It's a bit muggy.
All right, there you go. And Jim Ruskowski.
Ladies.
iFanboy. Wait, hold on. Hold on. Where's the guy? Something's different. Why is Jim? Wait. Is Connor on vacation again?
I am not privy to such information. I only go where they send me.
All right, here's the
thing. He's on another vision quest.
We can't talk about it. But what he's doing, it's of grave national importance. I've said too much. iFanboy.com is our website. It's about comic books. We did it because we like them and we read them because I don't know how you can like comics without reading them. I guess there's a whole subset of those people. They put them in plastic and whatnot. Either way, we're about reading them. We're about the stories, man. Every week we read a bunch of them. One of us gets the job of picking the one that they like best. We call that the pick of the week. A review goes up on Wednesday. Then we come here. We talk about that book. We talk about other books from the week. We answer some questions. There has been occasional tomfoolery.
I won't have it.
No,
you will. That's why they sent me.
Yeah.
I'm like that Graham Chapman general that comes into the Monty Python sketch. This is silly, and I won't have it.
Except he is, in fact, himself silly. I just saw this script bomb in this part.
Oh, really?
And I laughed. Before we get going, and this is Graham Chapman would want us to. This is spoilers. There's spoilers. Yeah, we won't have anyone spoiling
spoilers. Can I talk about my book now?
Please, we've got to do the bit. We heard everyone spoiling stories before. If you haven't read your books, come back later.
Paul, I can't tee Josh up to do an accent and have you start talking about the book.
It threw me off. I'm not going to lie.
Is that any way to kick off a podcast?
It was not my best grandchild.
I'm going to fire a haddock at you from a t-shirt cannon. This week, Paul had the pick. That's me. And I wrote again about Indestructible Hulk. Third time this has been the pick of the week. Second time I've made a pick of the week. Third time I've written about it overall. We've got a lot to say about the Indestructible Hulk.
I was thinking about it, and if it weren't for Daredevil, this would be a bigger book than it is. Because the thing is, we tend to think, man, that Mark Waid is really kicking butt on Daredevil. And as I was reading this and I saw that you made a pick, I thought, you know, this is something too. And we're because the other one's so good, it doesn't quite feel like it. It's like Scottie Pippen.
I think it gets maligned as sort of an also ran. it's his secondary book. It's in the sidecar, but you don't put Hulk in a sidecar.
Daredevil has also been a high-profile book for many years, whereas the Hulk has been kind of the middle child that nobody's really known what to do with for about the same amount of time.
That's true, and I you know I've
not like Aquaman. Not that bad.
Well, let's not say things we can't take back.
Well, the thing is, Mark Waid keeps coming up with great ideas for using the Hulk and using Banner, and a lot of arcs, they say, I'm going to do a book where it's equal parts Hulk and equal parts Banner, and it's going to be all about the duality of these characters, and that's every single time somebody starts a Hulk run. And I think in this case, Mark Waid has done that, and it's the Banner stuff is just as interesting as the Hulk stuff. They're there in equal measure. This is kind of a Banner-heavy issue, but Hulk also punches a plane. That's there for you if that's all you want from a Hulk book. But the thing that really struck me about this particular issue, which is Hulk involved in some time wonkiness, some time stream hijinks, and it all ends up with, you know, the Hulk and Banner in a robot body, like a drone in the Old West, and there's some dinosaurs about. So it does get to that place. But before it gets there, I thought that something, I think the most interesting thing about what Waid's been doing with this book is that so often the best stories, the milestone runs that we talk about are the outliers, are the stories that tend to ignore the current status quo, or just, you know, they don't want anything to do with the line-wide events. And, you know, it's going on right now with Thor, God of Thunder, which is completely divorced from the rest of the Marvel Universe. Same thing with Remender's Captain America run. And this is the complete opposite, because Waid is actually embracing all of the stuff that's been going on lately in the Marvel Universe, even Age of Ultron, of all things. So there's all this weird stuff going on with the time stream, because the Marvel heroes have meddled with the past, you know, one too many times, and now everything's going all wonky. So Waid is embracing that, and the stuff going on with All New X-Men is even, you know, referenced here. And so it's, I think that's really impressive that he's not bogged down by continuity. He's actually using it to augment his story.
Mm-hmm. He says even a little bit of Red She-Hulk, which was nice to get a mention, considering that it's canceled and was like the lowest selling book of last month or whatever. It was nice to see, for those, the three of us who did read it, it was nice to see Betty touched upon briefly.
Yeah, it's a little bit of meta commentary there in that, like, he's saying, you know, you should get Betty for this. She'd be great for this. I don't want to do this. But then he doesn't even remember. He's starting to forget Betty's name because his, you know, the time stream is affecting cognition as well. And
if they can just play Earth Angel and get Maria Hill to kiss one of those other guys, then chances are the song will just perk back up and he'll remember.
And there's just some really fun time travel stuff. I mentioned the dinosaurs in the Old West, but then there's also the scene where they're talking to the Tomorrow Man, Zarko, who's down in the bowels of S.H.I.E.L.D. headquarters in the Time Bureau. He's talking to them and he says, I experience time in a different way than you do. And you see from his perspective, you know, Maria Hill in, you know, pantaloons and, in a geisha outfit and through all different time periods. And it's all a little bit silly, but then I think the idea that you're losing hold of your memories and losing hold of people that you care about, and at least how you remember them, that's kind of scary.
Well, yeah. One of the things I thought was really impressive about this is that, I know we talk about Mark Waid a lot, but it almost seems like his powers are kind of limitless, and his hold on these sci-fi concepts, and this is pretty hard sci-fi, like this is yeah, full on stuff, and he has a way of presenting it as Paul, you were saying, that is 100% committed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
This was one of those things where I am not one for first person narrative. I think it's overused, but there's touches of it in here that are really nice. Where, you know, Zarko's like, I see things in a fourth dimension, and Banner's like, time. Like, everybody's committed to that belief of this being a thing, and he does this really well. It's actually where other people try to impress you with these kind of big concepts. Waid just sort of throws them out there, sort of subtly, And I like it. It's much more effective, I think.
Yeah, and there's a lot of setup toward the end where we're talking about the Hulk going on this adventure into the time stream to fix all this stuff. And he's going with an ROB unit, like a little probe droid that has the uploaded memories from the past week for Banner, so that you have Banner alongside the Hulk at the same time. And so they have like their little team up that they're going on. Where you get to have the wacky stuff like the T-Rex and and the Cowboys. So,
and there's a big Twinkie philosophy here. If he reverts back to Banner,
right,
that would be bad.
Yeah. It would be bad. And I'm sure we'll see hints of that as the storyline progresses.
No, I think they brought it up and it's never going to come up again.
It's never
going to
happen again. Yeah, Chekhov's gone. Yeah, but no. But then we also
everybody
mention,
brings it up again. This is that shit is old hat.
This is the second arc for Matteo Scalera. He did the previous two issues, which were the Hulk teaming up with Daredevil, which were fantastic, and he does some great stuff here. He does a great Hulk. It's not just a big posturing Hulk. He's always in motion. And I wrote in the written review that it looks like he's on a roller coaster all the time and his lips are like pulled back and like this permanent rictus grin. And he has that velocity, has that force that the Hulk has to have.
Yeah. They also added, or Wade also added, a new wrinkle into like the one remaining Hulk rule that I thought I could count on, which was that the Hulk you get is entirely dependent on the circumstances of the transformation, like what triggers it and whatever. And apparently there's like a chronal element to that too. But, you know, like, speaking of uploading memories, I officially have Marvel Osmosis because I know what the Time Bureau is and who Zarko is, but I have no goddamn idea why. Because I know I never read 60s Thor. And it's just in my mind.
As Wade went back in time and he planted it into your mind.
I can only assume.
If you're going to talk about Scalera, which you should, because he really, he's one of these guys, like, I can't imagine that he's not going to be a superstar. Mm-hmm. And if he isn't, that's stupid. But the other side, Val Staples did a really, really great job coloring this. And if you sort of look, each page has sort of a color theme to it. And it's very subdued. In the right way, and it's just the right palette for everything. There's greens, and then there's oranges and pinks, and the whole thing has a really nice feel to it. It's just the right amount of coloring.
I'm waiting for a review one day that just takes a chunk out of Val Staples' ass once and for all. Because everybody, like, people are so effusive of praise, you know, just every one time I want to hear somebody be like, what were they thinking about?
I'm sure it's somewhere. This early stuff.
I will say again, I feel obligated to do this, that this what Mark Waid is doing here with the Age of Ultron just goes to show why the Age of Ultron was the world's perfect crossover, and all those people at Silent San Diego were out of their goddamn minds.
I think it's the ramifications of Age of Ultron that are really interesting, not necessarily.
If you wanna do something with it, it's right there set up for you. If you want to pretend like it never happened, go for it. Pretend like it never happened. Won't cause any problems at all.
Well, and that's true of any event, though. I mean,
you won't have
to
deal with Colossus's fear hammer or whatever happened to the Juggernaut when Matt Fraction had him or whatever.
Well, it's like Age of M with M Day too. I mean, it ends with this pivotal event that I think has even more shockwaves than the event itself had. So, we should also probably talk about the end of an era with Batman Incorporated number 13.
Is Grant Morrison still writing Batman Incorporated?
Not anymore.
Is that what is the end of the era?
Yeah, I don't think the book exists without Grant Morrison.
No, I was going to ask why it did exist, but I guess that's the answer.
Well, there's a special they're going to be doing coming up, I think. So there's something more coming of this.
They're not going to put like Pete Tomasi on it or something, are they? Again.
I don't know what they're doing with this, but this is, to me, is just like, this is the last vestiges of Grant Morrison's Batman. And there, I think we had a great, Jeff did a great history of DC histories of Grant Morrison's Batman on the site. And I am not jealous of having to do that. Like that's a lot. There's a lot of material to cover, and there's highs and lows. I don't think it quite ended on a high.
You know, I got to say, I have a hard time distinguishing that anymore. Because when I read it, I'm just reading, all I'm thinking is, what is Grant Morrison thinking about Batman and comics in general right now? And even if I don't necessarily think it's the great thing, I've never have once failed to find it interesting.
Sure.
It's strange to me how the book exists both in continuity and nothing to do with continuity at the same time. I brought this up before. Like, they had Damian die in here, and he had to die everywhere else, but nothing else that happens in this book.
That's right.
So why does that count?
You're never going to see that cow again.
I love that. It was my favorite panel in the whole thing, by the way. He's let's see.
The cow
just
moves.
He says, shut up. And then a cat meows. I don't know what that cat's doing there.
They've accumulated a lot of animals in Batman Incorporated. So there's a lot of little sidekicks.
And this indicates that Jim Gordon, pretty clear on who Batman is.
I think it's kind of funny. Like at the end, he's like, I always kind of knew. this sort of seals the deal on it, though. He's Batman.
Yeah.
That's what I had
He'd have to have a head injury. I've written about this on the site just from reading Scott Snyder. You could not put your police force in the hands of someone that stupid. Just go read it.
I've always liked suspension of disbelief conceit that we just have all decided to go with, like Superman's glasses.
Well, I've always liked the idea that it's like they're playing a little game with each other.
I think that's the best way to go, but I think it's actually best usually when it's unsaid.
It's like the last few years that you believe in Santa Claus and you kind of go through it. And
yeah.
I'm doing this for mom and dad. They're doing it just for me. And then, finally we just,
I think the story coming out of this series is the ascension of Chris Burnham, as the guy who really could fill Frank Quitely's shoes. They went through a bunch of guys and then finally they got to Burnham and he's not doing Quitely. I don't think it just happens that they have a very sympathetic styles. And it's a if you think about when Batman and Robin started out, those first three issues were amazing, and these have some of that same kind of odd energy, and that part's fun. I've completely embraced it being wacky and having being unable to put a finger on this Batman. The fact that he kisses Talia, and they go through this whole thing, and the kiss lasts three pages.
Got the Batman Incorporated members like fighting on top of like a globe.
Yeah.
And it's just it's very broad, very out there. And again, I mention this every time. It's not really the Batman that I want to read about, but it's interesting.
Yeah, I think I liked it more, but I'm also still very slowly reading through Super Gods. So looking at it through that lens, I find it more interesting.
I love Super Gods. It's really fantastic. Another Mark Waid book, Daredevil number 29, courtroom drama. To the extreme.
Yes.
There's a ticking bomb.
This was the most out there storyline, I think, that they've...
It's really pretty bizarre.
It's really bizarre. And it's funny because Waid is really sticking with the Sons of the Serpent thing. They were in Hulk,
too. They were in the Hulk, yeah.
He's going to make this be a thing. This wasn't like my favorite or best issue of Daredevil. It's kind of like they're in a box, and there's a whole thing going on and everybody's against him. And I was like, this is a big problem, but I see how it sets up a storyline that that thing carry on for a little while, and he's got to clean out the halls of justice. It was fine.
I like.
Your
I like
enthusiasm
that it,
is overwhelming.
I like that it does acknowledge that even though he has all these extrasensory powers, Daredevil is in fact blind. So when
like
they
that,
go
right?
by a door that says basement, he doesn't know what level he's on. He's like, well, there was that sign back there. He's like, oh yeah, I must have missed that. There's a lot going on. I missed that sign. I didn't get to brush my fingers across it. And
yeah.
So
I liked where they left it at the end of last issue. That was a classic, like, how will Batman get out of it? Like the classic last page where they're in the middle of a court proceeding and the judge just stands up and shoots the defendant.
If you look at this, if you just think about what kind of story this is compared to what kind of story is going on in Hulk, you'd think those are completely different writers, which I like.
Yeah. No, and what was interesting with the last issue that cliffhanger is that Matt's helping out his friend in court, and this guy is the Tom Arnold, the bully from his childhood, who's come to him for help.
Are you about to reference the Tom Arnold Rick Moranis movie?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think it might have been.
Yeah, it might have been called. Well, that there's a Harmony Korine movie by that. You don't want to mix those up,
right? Yeah.
But yeah, there was a movie with Rick Moranis and Tom Arnold as his childhood bully. I think they were in a carpool together.
Yeah, and they grow up, and so right. Yeah. So he was trying to help him out in this court case, and then the judge pulls out a gun and shoots him. And up until that point, I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. I've been looking forward to maybe, you know, Wade doing an actual courtroom drama, like an episode of The Good Wife or something. And that might be a little bit fun after having this Bullseye and an Iron Maiden, you know, arc with all these isotopes and things. And I was like, there's something different. And then the judge pulls out a gun. So it's a little wacky. But yeah, I like that too. And I like the bomb scare. And this is Javier, not Chris Omni on art. Yeah. But it looks a lot like Chris Omni. In fact, I was fooled for a little bit.
Oh, no. No. Sorry. This is like The Colorist. He came in. I got to say, that's some range for a colorist. You can say whatever you want about Val Staples, but I don't see him filling in on pencils for the next issue.
Mm-hmm, right.
Right.
Maybe he wants to. Maybe I just struck a nerve.
All right, Dads. Let's talk about Animal Man number 2. Animal Man Annuals number 2.
Did you read this? I'll listen about it.
I did.
Okay.
How's that
it's
sound?
Fine. I got to say, this probably would have been my pick of the week.
Really?
Okay. As a dad, I was extremely touched.
Yeah.
I may have even shed a tear or two.
I like that this is a sweet kind of heartwarming story about Animal Man and his recently deceased son with the mullet, Cliff. But through the creepy, creepy lens of Animal Man and Travel Foreman. And I'm excited to see Travel Foreman back at least for this annual. That was the most exciting thing coming out of the New 52, this weird book with this weird art style that wasn't for everybody, and I totally get that, but it's just really creepy and weird, and there's a crazy spider lady who eats your dreams.
Yeah, I liked that part, that it was actually a horror book.
Yeah,
you know, at the same time, which feels really right for this to me. Like, I feel like this fits, especially with Foreman doing the art. But the sort of flashback bit of it and the sweet part of it was totally
the last page, you know, that last panel where, and basically to spoil it, Animal Man goes back to this Spider Queen lady who had previously fed on his son's dreams, to see if she had any residual bit of Cliff's consciousness that he could see his son's happiest moment. Because he misses him. In the beginning, he talks about there being this little boy-sized void in his life. Because he had everything. He had this wife that he loved. He had a son and a daughter, and now the son is gone, and nothing can fill that. So he's going to the ends of the earth to find this spider creature and say, I want to see what he saw when he was having his you know, sweetest dreams. And then you see Animal Man curled up in a fetal position in a spider web, like in agony, but then also relief to be connected with his son again in a way. It's a weird confluence of things, and I really like that it's heartwarming but also deeply disturbing.
It sounds like it's entirely in keeping with the Animal Man I read when the New 52 kicked off, and I know that people were big fans of that. Did it merit an annual?
Well, this is the second annual. So there was an annual
before.
They
all get one.
They all get
That's
one.
That's like saying, does it merit a series?
I think it's a good moment to chronicle for an annual. I didn't love all of the writing in this. Like, some of the dialogue was just weird. I kind of also like that his police detective, police chief friend, like, is an idiot. Like, he's kind of dumb. Like, he's
I like that they live in, like, they basically live in Middle Earth, where this creature will come out from
it's
nowhere.
Like Shalob comes out,
and they don't really, they're like, yeah, no, we sent him back in his sewer, it's okay.
That's exactly the voice that I hear that character speaking.
Yeah,
like, that's,
I don't care. Hey, man, no, don't worry. No, I put them back in there. It's fine. Don't worry about
it. Yeah, but like, it's funny because this is definitely not Commissioner Gordon. This is not.
No,
you know,
this guy wouldn't have a clue who Batman was.
Exactly. He would have
Batman would walk out of the room, and then Bruce Wayne would walk back in, big bruise on his face.
So, you know, maybe he's Superman. I don't know.
Did you see? You missed Batman. He was right here.
I don't know. I don't know about that, sir.
I think that's an interesting character choice that the police chief is an idiot.
That's why we need animal men.
New from Vertigo, Collider number one.
This was a hell of a thing, wasn't it? I read this.
Why don't you tell us what you think about it? If you decide to read something, I guess you go ahead and talk about it.
I couldn't remember. Like, all I really knew about it was that it was a number one and that I was doing this.
Yes.
And number ones tend to do well around these here parts. So I gave it a try, and I found it very imaginative. I thought it was kind of it reminded me a little bit of how Ghostbusters was pitched back in the 80s, like in Dan Aykroyd's crazed.
Were you in the room?
No, but like I when I was a kid, I used to read obsessively about the things like this. Like, it wasn't enough to see the movie. I had to read about the movie and, you know, taste, you know, Dan Aykroyd's
hair. I find that, and this is after a lot of experience, that only leads to
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Let go a little bit, everyone.
Yeah, like originally Dan Aykroyd's Alien Probed Brain had written like this 300-page script that was set slightly in the future, and hauntings were normal and Ghostbusters were like the Orkin Man as far as people, like there was nothing odd about it at all. And this kind of reminded me of that same thing. Like, it's a given that the fundamental laws of physics are breaking down and people just sort of call 911 and report it as an emergency for the physics department or whatever.
Yeah, it's a little blue collar. I mean, like, it doesn't feel like, you know, all polished like the Men in Black or anything. It's
blue collar is a perfectly succinct way to abbreviate everything I just said.
so they come out and they deal with it. There's this school, right? And there's a gravity problem. Gravity is not working the way it should be. And they go into a thing and there's some stuff going on. I think there's a lot of big concepts in here that are very interesting, and I'll be following this. I just hope that there's a bit more character stuff to dig into, because I don't really know who these guys are yet.
I can give you that. Did you either of you ever read The Exterminators?
It reminded me of that. Yeah.
Yeah. I read the first trade. I thought,
yeah,
I had bought volume one, and it turned out I had bought volume four, which
happens.
Things up a little bit, but still, I get what you're saying.
Well, no, this is Simon Oliver. I haven't seen him on a comics series since The Exterminators. So when I saw it was his name on it, I was very excited. He was supposed to do a run of Hellblazer, and it never came together for whatever reason. And also, Robbie Rodriguez, very much, by the way, in the Mateo Scalera camp, I think, is another guy who I've seen from doing SketchUp and doing those kind of things. And I really like that style a hell of a lot, too.
It reminded me a little bit of that Captain Marvel artist we liked so much an arc ago.
Felipe Andrade.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, I can see it, too.
All those things you guys said, the sort of... I love the huge concept brought into every day.
Mm-hmm.
This is just a thing, because the thing is, we have as a population of people who have this routine of our lives, we have no choice but to assimilate whatever else is going on and make it normal in our minds,
mm-hmm.
or we'll lose our shit. So the idea that gravity breaking down every once in a while and them having to fix it, like, it would just eventually it would get to be a thing like, power's out, damn it, you know, like, and I. That's a wonderful look at how things is, because you can't, you know, everybody isn't going to necessarily lose their shit. They're going to the first time, but eventually they're going to get used to it.
Eventually they're going to shout "Wee" and jump into the anomaly.
Yeah. This is the best first issue I've read from Vertigo in a long time. This is just my style.
I can't remember the last first issue from Vertigo I read.
Well, it would be The Wake, but
that's why we keep you around.
Yeah. Usually I don't remember things like this. I'd be like, I don't know. There hasn't been any stories.
What didn't I like about the colors?
I don't know what you didn't like about it, because I didn't really mind the colors.
Okay. I think they felt a little bit flat.
I don't have the vocabulary for this, but I want to say 90s Taco Bell cup.
That's kind of, yeah, it's...
Here's what you're seeing. Okay. I think that they only chose a couple. There's a blue palette and a pink palette, basically. That's pretty much all that's going on here.
All right, I'm with you.
And they decide to keep it to just a few, but those two colors definitely feel like they clash with each other.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it's like a blue shirt and salmon pants.
There are a lot of stark blue backgrounds and stark pink backgrounds, and it feels to me a little bit like it's unfinished. Like,
do you know what it feels like to me? It feels to me like a stylistic video game color palette.
Mm-hmm.
I could see a game, something like this, something like Mirror's Edge,
okay,
put into this color palette.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look, there's a couple of the really nice, there's some shots of the cars and the rain at night.
Yeah.
That stuff is great. Just,
yeah, there's some really striking images. Overall, there's some pages that, and also, is there no ink on this? Is this, because you see a lot of raw pencil.
I don't have it
in front of me right now. So
Bobby Rodriguez, you know, is pretty loose and scratchy. I mean, the only thing about this is the kind of art that I absolutely adore, but it's the kind that no one else seems to. At least no one, you know, in sort of the larger audience.
Okay, so this podcast is brought to you by Eternal Warrior Number 1, and that goes a little something like this. Across 10 millennia and 1,000 battlefields, Jalad Anipada has traversed the darkest, most mysterious corners of history. But the horror and bloodshed of constant warfare has finally taken its toll on the man myth calls the Eternal Warrior. And he has abdicated his duties as the First and the Steel of Earth for a quiet life of seclusion. But when a blood vendetta from the distant past suddenly reappears in the modern day, he must decide if he will return to the ways of war for the child who betrayed him thousands of years ago. Soldier, guardian, warrior, legend, it all starts on September 11th when Greg Pak and Trevor Hairsine begin an all-new campaign for Valiant's most feared immortal in Eternal Warrior Number 1.
Okay, so here's my editorial part about that ad.
Yeah.
Does not sound very funny.
No.
But well, at the same time,
I think you would take himself very seriously.
It does. It just sounds very serious without a hint of irony. At the same time, I would pay you to read ads like that for me. In a way, I have. But
that's right.
Also, Greg Pak has done nothing but prove his worth and his value.
This sounds like it's right in the wheelhouse of the Planet Hulk author.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you should look into that. Yeah.
But we also have him to thank for Hercules and Amadeus Cho. So who the hell knows where the yuck yucks are going to come from?
He can do a Nazi concentration cramp story, or he can do a silly Hercules story.
Nazi concentration cramp, I love it.
concentration cramp.
I'm leaving it right where it was.
Concentration cramp was a very specific set of experiments.
Please stop.
Ordered by Goebbels.
Please stop. Flash Annual Number 2. It's a big week of annuals, and I wanted to talk about
the Batman annual. Left me wondering a lot about what the nature of an annual is, what it is supposed to be for.
It's a special.
That's why
it's a celebration.
Was it a different artist?
It was by Sammy Basri, but
by a different artist.
He was doing what's his face? Francis Manipal. Mm. So it fits very much in that milieu, but gorgeous, absolutely beautiful, very colorful book. And I really like this, and I'm talking about the main feature, which is by Brian Buccoletto and Sammy Basri. There's also a backup by Dubuk and Cully Hamner. And this felt to me like sort of like a lost episode of Justice League Unlimited. And it's very just refreshingly lighthearted buddy adventure for Barry Allen and Hal Jordan, and it's sort of their first meeting, which is a much more pleasant first meeting than the Justice League book from the New 52. And just the thing is, it feels like pre-New 52 stuff. It's because it's fun, and it's not people grimacing all the time. And it's something that you could give to a younger reader, and they would fall in love with these characters.
I've noticed that the highest praise you can give a DC book is comparing it to the animated shows or pre-New 52.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. Like I think Connor has mentioned that one of the best venues for superhero stories is animation, not even mm-hmm. comics. Like, we love superhero comics. We continue to enjoy them, but animation is just sort of like the perfect fit.
They also seem to be, this is incredibly subjective, it seems to me like the people who they have in charge of doing at least DC and Marvel animation have a much better handle on the idea of all ages.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
and what that means and how to make it enjoyable for actually all ages. It's something kids can like. It's something that like comics can't do it. Can either make something that you know that makes Alan Moore go, "That's too serious," or just something that's stupid.
For an alternative view on that, check out our special edition podcast on Justice League, The Flashpoint Paradox, which you should not share with your children.
Yeah, that also.
Speaking of things that you might not want to share with your children, sex, number five.
Here's the thing I've noticed.
Penis.
I did notice that.
Yeah.
It was a big ol' schwang.
Read this one in the office. Not a good idea.
There seems to be a lot of porno comics coming out of Image ever since a guy I know started working there.
I wasn't going to draw the lines.
I'm saying, you know, before he even went over there, he was all like, yeah, Black Kiss is good. So clearly the guy had an agenda. I have a Black Kiss issue, like a comp issue sitting in my office that I had to move.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that can't be there. And that's not a lot. Okay.
Put that down in the stack a little bit.
I've made the jokes. But here's the thing is that there's never sex in this book that's actually consummated.
Yeah.
Right.
The guy never gets to, like, there's not actually, it's called sex, but it really never quite happens for him.
I believe on Orange is the New Black, they refer to that as edging.
Okay. Fair enough. I think this is the best book that Joe Casey's done in as long as I can remember. I think it's fantastic. And I know that it's adult, and I think people either can or can't accept the idea of, like, what that means. But it's really good. It's fascinating. It's another sort of look at the superhero that I haven't seen.
I really like it. I before this week, I would have called it the worst titled book in the marketplace. And after this week, I don't know whether I would change that or not.
I mean, it is like it's supposed all of the things.
I like how in your face it is.
Yeah. I mean, and that's joking.
I guess I'm waiting to see. Like, it doesn't seem to me that that's what the book is about. But
it is.
It is.
It's yeah, all maybe. About
well,
that.
It's also, it's literally. Also, I think also just to get a little meta here is I think when you pick up the book and you feel uncomfortable about it, that puts you in the shoes of Simon, the main character, mm-hmm. that this guy is totally uneasy. And
yeah, he's been neglecting a part of himself
yeah.
for a good long
that's
while.
That's a good way of putting it.
I saw that part.
Yeah.
That part just springs out. there's also people who have said that this is kind of a slow burn comic, and I think that's and I think also kind of a slow jam comic. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think this is also going to read really well in like a collection.
Oh yes,
I
agree.
I think our friend Sonya's doing a fantastic job on the design of it.
Absolutely,
it's a great looking book. It's really very good, and I'm more impressed by it every time.
It's all about character, and so mm-hmm. I love that.
This will never succeed, but there you go.
Jim, talk about Guardians of the Galaxy number five.
I don't know whether I was in an amazing mood last night or whether the book put me in an amazing mood, but I wanted to submit a best panels feature that was just a duplicate of this book.
I believe like, it. It's beautiful.
I read it in the hated, what do you call it? Guided view that you guys don't go for.
And I do.
On what device?
On an iPad.
Why would you do that when you could see
because
the whole page?
Because it allows me to
page.
Zoom into the art and appreciate it. See, I'm one of these people who had a bad habit of reading the word balloons and not really paying attention to the art and finding that I was one of those people who went through an issue in a 3.5 minutes or whatever.
Right.
So I found that back in the old ink and paper days, if I used a magnifying glass, it forced me to focus my attention.
I remember
like
you telling
my goldfish like penchant for distraction was cut down by this, and now guided view does that
it
same
focuses
thing.
Focuses you. That makes yes. sense. I buy that.
Don't
I like guided view.
I get that.
Who drew this?
Pacelli, right?
Oh, no. It's the new artist, Sarah Pacelli, and it's gorgeous. Yeah. And there's some.
Not like I've never seen Pacelli before.
Does
you know
a great
I mean?
Raccoon?
Yeah.
Does a great raccoon? Does a great Angela?
A wonderfully expressive Tony Stark. There's a sequence where this cuddly raccoon is making Tony look like a moron because he's never even heard of the tools he needs to repair his armor that the raccoon can, you know, pull out and use in 5 minutes flat. And every look on Tony's face, I wanted to frame for some reason.
Did you make the armor look terrible still?
It was in pieces at the time.
Okay. Yeah, you don't.
Yeah.
There's also a great fight scene between Angela and Gamora.
Wow.
Love that character.
Angela, still no idea what is important or special about her, but nope. You don't need to.
She's mad. She doesn't want to be there. Yes.
She's been pulled from some other dimension. If you know who she is, it's probably amazing. If you don't know who she is, you're fine. That's because the Age of Ultron was the best event of the 21st century, and that's all there is to it. But
I need to have a diversion here for a second because I need to go back to this. Do you read all your books in Guided View?
Do you really need to know how the sausage is made, Josh? I could talk.
No, I'm curious.
What I'll typically do is I will look at the page as a whole, and then I will zoom in. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I see.
Yeah, I have it both ways.
This is totally a comic creator.
Now, how do you handle this? Part. Bendis is addicted to the double page spread of.
Oh, I know.
You know, it gets like you need a microscope for your iPad.
I used to. I can read it on an iPad because I used to read it on a Kindle.
Oh dear.
And the Kindle was just. Ugh. But the iPad, I can deal with it. And I'll pinch zoom a little bit if I need to. I don't like
a Kindle Fire, not like an Etch-a-Sketch Kindle.
Yeah, no, yeah, Kindle Fire.
Do people do that?
No.
I know there's a buying option to do that.
The Kindle Fire is just adequate to read a comic.
Yeah, I had a Kindle Fire for a day and I returned it.
Yeah, no, they're an awful machine.
Yeah.
But the thing is, as a person who's dabbled in the art of creation of comic books, I find that the most challenging and interesting thing about a comic book page is how it works as a whole. How it's comprised, how the panel transitions are going, how the storytelling works in that page. And I feel like if you zoom into the panels like that, and I get why they started doing it, but because phones, I guess, excuse me, if you zoom into that, you're unless it was done like that on purpose.
Right.
Yeah, every once in a while there'll be a panel that was so small on the page that like the dude just drew two dots for eyes or whatever. And you're like, I should not be doing what I'm doing right now. But, you know, like I said, I try to take it as a whole and then I'll zoom in on particular things.
I also recognize though that the comic book page as we know it, is going to die. And I hate that so much. It's like the people who don't like music recorded on a digital board or whatever. Like I've spent so much time trying to understand the comic book page. Anyway, that's a diversion.
We could go down the Private Eye road and talk about all that
stuff.
But Guardians of the Galaxy was very good. You should read it. It's pretty.
Yeah. It's fun.
Tell me about this Tom Strong that you went in for and I did not.
Tom Strong and the Planet Apparel #1. I've always liked Tom Strong. I like that idea and I like that it's a golden age sort of concept. I guess I came into reading comics as an adult reading the Geoff Johns Justice Society of America book, which was steeped in all this kinds of stuff. And I like that this is golden agey without all of the jingoism and embarrassing racism of actual golden age stuff. You know what I mean? So like, it's just I can read this like without guilt and enjoy it.
This is great. Oh, he said darkies.
Right.
Yes.
Exactly.
Have your Tintin and eat it.
There's that thing I was talking about with Tintin, but yeah. So this is it's great and it's a great interracial family, and this is a really wonky idea for this story is that his daughter Tesla is pregnant, and the baby daddy is an alien who is like the Human Torch on fire all the time, and so is the baby. So under duress, so when at high points of stress, the baby will go on fire inside the mom, and that's a problem, medically speaking.
That's what we like to call a metaphor for those of us who spent time around pregnant women.
Right.
And I have no comment.
So Tom Strong has to figure out how to deal with this. So they put her in sort of a chamber, which is going to take care of this for a little while and keep her calm and sedate and not on fire. And he's got to go to an alternate reality planet that he knows of where there's another Tom Strong who takes a serum that makes him invulnerable. And if he can get that serum and share it with his daughter, she can be invulnerable and get through this pregnancy okay. And the interesting thing about this other planet where this alternate Tom Strong is that whatever happens on that planet, for whatever reason, is chronicled on Earth in actual comic books. So it's sort of like that Will Ferrell movie, The Stranger Than Fiction, where whatever he does, it's mirrored in a comic book on another planet. And But Tom Strong finds out that they've stopped printing these comics a few years ago. So does that mean that the planet blew up? What happened on that planet? So he goes there and he finds out that it's under martial rule, and we haven't actually touched down on the surface of the planet yet, but something weird is going on. And
I think Alan Moore stopped writing them.
That's true.
Right. By the way, did you say who made this happen?
This is Peter Hogan and Chris Sprouse.
Now, Paul, have you read the Alan Moore stuff?
I read the first trade, and actually after I read this, and I've read scattered issues since then, and like the last Peter Hogan book, uh-huh, miniseries, I actually went and ordered the deluxe edition of the Alan Moore stuff.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
So, yeah.
I got to say, I'm looking at this, and it looks like Sprouse has loosened up a little bit. It's a mm-hmm. little rougher, which I don't necessarily like. Colors by Jordi Belair are good to go. The lettering is actually really specific to this book. And they've still got Todd Klein doing it, which is rad.
I think it looks great. Yeah. And then obviously the comic books are actual comic books that, like Terra Obscura mm-hmm. and those ABC comic books. And so like they're actually, I don't know, photo referenced or photoshopped into it, but it gets very meta. And yeah, I liked it.
All right. Let's whip through the rest of these. The Wake number 3 came out. I didn't put this on the list, so.
It was pretty, that book has got range.
Yeah.
And I'm not quite sure. I'm just waiting for it all to come together. I'm giving Scott Snyder the kind of leeway I would never give Grant Morrison, because I'm trusting him to pay it off in a way that a dum-dum like me will understand.
Well, this is second act action stuff.
Did the last issue leave off just before this stuff? Because I feel like I skipped something. I don't mind that.
Yes, like, oh, you might have had a Mars-sized curveball thrown at you.
Yeah.
That put you off your game. But yes, the killer mermaid was in the process of hypnotizing people at the end of the last issue.
That's right.
It was at the slow, sexy seduction part of the monster attack, and then we skip forward to the adrenaline rush. We got to get out of here. And I like the fact that it tricked me a couple of times, where you get into a scene and then a character turns out to be the mermaid, fooling everyone with its eye sacs full of neurotoxins.
And then apparently,
yeah. And then at some point, we'll be 200 years in the future or something, and the fact that Mars used to have water on it will come into play at some point.
But I mean, this is like those you know, great movies that they don't really necessarily make anymore.
Yes,
like Alien, like the original Alien, and the Thing, not the remake of the Thing,
right?
The original Thing. Well, I guess it's like the remake of the Thing too, but. I like that it keeps you guessing, and it feels like a cool 80s horror movie.
Yes. I will say, I just saw John Carpenter's The Thing for the first time about a month ago or whatever, and The Thing with the blood was – I can't remember the last time a movie from 1982 took me – like struck me as that imaginative. It was probably 1982 when it happened.
I'm going to make you move on now. Let's cover Uncanny X-Men number 9. The one I'm not reading.
What do this is the one you're not reading? Oh, they're out of the two. You mean?
It's a lot of X-Men books. I'm reading.
Yes, there are a lot of X-Men books, and there's going to be more.
This one centers on the idea that S.H.I.E.L.D. has recruited Dazzler.
Yes.
And
is the Brian Wood one?
No. This is the other Bendis one. It's Bendis and Bocciolo.
Right.
Yes. This is in his classic in his classic New Avengers, Mighty Avengers. Telling two sides of the same story. It's like crack to me. Your mileage may vary. But
I've found historically I like one side.
Yeah. Well, if I tend to like the one side, and then I read the other side and let it frustrate me, and that's what this book is. I don't know what I think about the idea that a pop star is now a agent of the world's most secretive organization. I don't like, but I guess I'd have to know a little bit more about what it is Dazzler, what role Dazzler fits in their TMZ world. Like, is she Lady Gaga? Is she Kylie Minogue?
Well, I don't know if they'll get that specific, but there is a woman, I guess the sister of the Gold Balls kid mm-hmm. in San Diego, comes out with the Dazzler, the movie poster. It says, "Oh, this is you," and like she's trying to do her thing and be serious S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. And okay, so parting word on this is that my only real problem with this book, I enjoy it. There's a lot of blonde women that look exactly the same.
Well, yeah, got a little bit of a Botulo problem there.
There's a slight Botulo problem. I have trouble discerning between Emma Frost, Dazzler, and
the cuckoos.
Botulism.
I stepped on that, and it deserved better. one of the Stepford Cuckoos dyed her hair this issue. Maybe that's why.
It was awful. Yeah, I like that.
Now that I think about it, if you were trying to convince teenage mutants to join your side, you could do worse than having a pop star be the ambassador of, well, yeah. I got to give it to that Maria Hill. She knows what she's doing.
And then Cyclops calls her the Uncle Tom of mutants, which made the rounds on the comic.
That's a little loaded. Chris Claremont had Kitty Pryde use the N-word once in an argument.
I saw that. That came up this week.
Oh, did it?
Yeah.
So user reviews.
Why, you don't want to talk about the N-word at great length on your podcast?
That's not even it, okay, but talking. It's a good reason also.
User reviews. Top five picks of the week. Number five, Animal Man Annual, number two, got a 9.3%. Four, The Flash Annual, number two, 10.3%. Number three, Optic Nerve, number 13, 13.5%. Two, Daredevil, number 29, 16.1%. Number one, Batman Incorporated, 20.1%. Batman Incorporated, number one, just before we move on, has fluctuated. It's gone all around the map in terms of the percentage points. Like it was at 0.3, and then it was at 20, and then it was at like 0.5, and then the last time I checked it was at 20.1% again. So it's all over the place. Let's take a look at some of the user reviews. Cabernet Franc wrote of Optic Nerve number 13, story 5 out of 5, art 5 out of 5, pick of the week percentage again 13.5%. This issue mirrors the format of the last, with three short stories across a range of drawing styles and tones. The initial one-pager is the funniest, a self-deprecating auto-bio strip showcasing Tomine's luddism, but the real punchline arrives on the letters page. The largest story, Owls, tells of the relationship between two alcoholic losers from wary beginning to pathetic end. The characters are flawed and troubled, but so human and naturalistic that they become likable regardless. The final story is a first-person narrative of anxiety and young motherhood told with stunning images of the blandness and uniformity of air travel. Tomine can draw, and he's a master study of character. This is a great, highly recommended $6 package and strong candidate for single issue of the year. If this and Hulk were like vying for pick of the week, and I was like, this is the weirdest problem anyone has ever had.
That's range.
Ultimately, I had more to say about Indestructible Hulk. I think I liked the previous issue of Optic Nerve a little bit more when it came out way back in September of 2011. But great cartooning, great slice of life stuff. I think you should go out and grab it if you can find it.
I always liked the way it looked, but it was always just a bummer.
The first, this one particularly is kind of a bummer.
That's fine.
And go ahead.
Let's move along.
Yeah.
Charlie Sherpa read Captain Midnight number one by my friend Josh Williamson. Gave a story of 4 out of 5, and the art of 4 out of 5, pick of the week percentage was 2.2%. The skull faced time traveling Nazis? Check. Nazi eating polar bears? Check. Joshua Williamson's dialogue propels the first issue forward with sufficient thrust in his layouts. Artist Fernando Dagnino rightly takes dramatic advantage of the available swooping and climbing and diving. Meanwhile, colorist Ego, that's unfortunate, it's no Johnny Christmas, subtly recasts moods and scenes via palette changes between pages. Together, they're delivered a quick takeoff and potentially on a potentially engaging run for this title. He's not willing to say it is engaging.
This is a longer review. I had to find, you know. The
He's been hurt before. Sounds like this and Optic Nerve are basically the same book.
Yes.
Is that true, but yes. Yeah, exactly. I read the 01, but I actually didn't get to this one yet, and I'm sorry.
Okay.
So, all of those things that he said are right. It's got time-traveling Nazis and a World War II here. It's very pulpy. It's a Golden Age character that's been brought into the modern age.
This is Dark Horse, right?
Yep.
Okay, Dark Horse. This is the part of that pulp resurgence over at Dark Horse, taking a bunch of different characters.
But Josh keeps getting better and better, so it's a good book. If this sounds like your kind of thing, it is your kind of thing.
Josh, if I wanted to take up the French horn,
mm-hmm.
Where should I buy a French horn?
Well, before you did that, I would tell you that if you wanted to rate and review your books, you go to ifanboy.com/comics and you can put stuff up there. You can pull your books, you can rate them, and then if you write a review, then we will read that on the show if it is correctly placed for various reasons.
Josh,
then
if I wanted to buy a new supportive co-host that helped me out when I jumped ahead of things in the script, where would I go to buy one of those?
First of all, I'm not for sale. But if I was, there would definitely be a page on Amazon.com that you would go to. And to get to that, we recommend you go to ifanboy.com/Amazon. A speech impediment there. And buy the thing there so that we can get, say that you buy what would essentially be a person. Whatever fee that you decide was that we would get some small percentage of that.
What would happen
if
someone bought a copy of Astro Van by Josh Flanagan through the iFanboy Amazon link?
I would get about 60 cents and then maybe another 2 cents.
Would you get more money through iFanboy or more money through just
I honestly
selling
don't know
your
where the
work.
Money for iFanboy goes.
Yeah, I don't know.
I
either.
Certainly don't get it.
It's like being John Malkovich. It just spits out like over the interstate somewhere.
Yeah, I assume it's being collected somewhere, and then someday I'll get a check for $85. I think that's what will happen.
You want to take a look at some of those audience questions?
Let's do one. I'll do this first one. Does that sound good to you?
Sure.
Yeah, okay. The other one wants to know what good statues we like, and I don't know what good statues.
Yeah, we're not the crowd for that.
Okay.
Yeah. The best statue ever is the Dark Knight Returns statue.
We're saving up some of our best questions for episode 400.
That's right.
Tyler from Yonkers writes in. How do I not read this like this? Ant-Man doesn't really have much of a rogues gallery, if any. And now we know that Ultron's going to be in Avengers 2 without Hank Pym, according to Whedon. Which villain you think is best suited to be the big bad for the Ant-Man solo film? Keep up the great work. Thanks from Yonkers.
I think it would be really funny if the bad guy in Ant-Man was just like a cat.
I was waiting to see whether this was going to be a race to the word boot man or not.
Borax man. Borax is a soap-based chemical.
Yes.
Oh, I know.
Is a non-toxic ant poison.
It took me a second, but yeah. So, no, but I mean, like, yeah, that's a good point.
Dumb jokes we
made. Do you know any Ant-Man characters? Like any Ant-Man villains?
Yeah, Janet Van Dyne.
Well,
Ant-Man hasn't had a book in my lifetime, I don't think. Well, unless you count Kirkman's run. But
which the rumor was that that's what this was based on, and it was going to be that character. But then we've since been told, I think Edgar Wright has said, that it's going to be Hank Pym. So
I just found out this movie comes out in November 2015.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I, like, yeah.
That's a long time for them to figure it out.
How about Loki again? Loki's good.
Yeah.
I'm only half joking. Like,
they don't seem to have any problem getting Hiddleston into that outfit.
He seems to be having a good time.
Yeah.
He's a really good screen villain, too. I like that
Here's
guy.
Here's the thing. It's weird when he does it in public. I got to be honest.
I like it.
It's weird. I mean, like, I get it. People are like, oh, that's fun.
See, you don't like Andrew Garfield getting all...
It's a little children's birthday party.
Yeah, that was the thing. I picture a really long, serious sigh just before stepping out there. And the absence of that sigh indicates some sort of problem.
Right.
Like, this is not why I studied at the Queen's.
Step up, children,
cartoon.
Pin the tail on the donkey.
Like, he flashed forward to a certain extent. He saw himself sitting at one of those sad, sad tables next to Virgil, who's 105 years old at the time, and just thinking, this can't be all there was.
Oh, Virgil.
You know, I don't know the answer to this question, because even though I like Hank Pym a lot as a great character, no idea. I mean, Ultron?
He would probably have to do AIM or, well,
Ultron.
AIM.
What do we know about Hank Pym? We know that he has shrinky powers. We know that he may or may not take a swing at the ladies. And we know that he is a super scientist. And I don't think that using those first two will be a great advantage to anybody. So they'll probably set him up with a villain that either uses his inventions for evil, a la Armor Wars, or, you know, some other kind of scientist supreme thing.
Edgar Wright is primarily a comedy director, though. Has he done a thing that's not comedy?
I guess Scott Pilgrim is a comedy.
Yeah, but it's like a
Hot Fuzz. I don't know.
So no, I mean, like, so I don't know. Is this going to be his?
What if it's like the movie where Greg Kinnear is the guy who invented like windshield wipers, but then like they don't, you know, give him the money for it, and they try to steal his idea. And so, like, what if like Hank Pym like comes up with like, you know, Pym particle stuff, and then Sam Rockwell from Iron Man 2 comes in, and he's like, "Is he still alive?"
I think he went to jail.
Okay.
I don't ever want to see him in a movie.
But I love the fake tan on his hands. That was.
We have to settle whether or not that guy likes his bird.
Right.
Once and for all.
I don't know. You're lucky to have forgotten it.
Yeah.
And it was awful.
It's like all coming back to me as we're talking.
I like Sam Rockwell.
It's the most tiresome exchange in 21st century film.
I think it should be Tony Shalhoub.
Ooh, whoever it is.
I think it should be Tony Shalhoub, like, as a cat. I think it'd be really funny if it was like Janet had a cat. And like the cat is just chasing him around the whole movie. Like, he can't.
So basically, you're talking about Stuart Little.
You're setting up like the Marvel equivalent of the Jack Black, Robert Smigel, Green Lantern movie from a couple of years ago.
Yes, I would watch the shit out of that now.
I read the script. Yeah.
At the time, I was like, oh my God, that'd be awful. These characters need to be respected. I would watch the shit out of that.
Did you guys watch the sizzler reel kind of thing that Edgar Wright came up with?
No.
Like showing what, you know, Ant-Man can do. Like, it's a pretty good showcase, or at least he's got some cool powers.
Yeah, he doesn't
like,
seem
it shows him
to think
flashing,
it's a joke.
Like, back and forth between, like, really small to regular size and what you can do with that. And, like, what you can do with, like, your trajectory if you switch sizes.
I wonder if Nathan Fillion can wear the suit. I don't know if you've noticed, he's a great big fat person now.
It'll be like a Count Dooku. They'll just put his head onto the body of, you know,
of a 12-year young
the guy who plays Ape Sapien, right. That guy.
No, just he's not a Superman guy. Doug Jones. All right, let's thank you. If you wrote in, you can do so again to contact@ifanboy.com. Or if you wanted to leave a voicemail for it, you can do that at 888-FANBOYS, which is 3262697. And if you listened to the Make Comics podcast that came out, episode 50, you'll know that I'm all done with it. So, sorry about that. No, thank you very much for listening. There's 50 of those podcasts there that I did with Andy Schmidt from Comics Experience, and I'm very, 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 very proud of them. It's one of the most meaningful things.
Josh had to step down because of the sex scandal that you're going to be hearing about soon.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He had to distance himself. And
it's funny because Anthony Weiner totally cribbed my thing, which I was kind of pissed off about. So I sent him a picture of my dick.
I was really looking forward to episode 75. What happens when you've been doing it for 8 years?
Yeah, exactly. It's just ridiculous. I'm going to talk about making comics. I have no time to do it. So,
other podcasts that we do, we have some special edition shows for you. The Wolverine came out, and we have a conversation about that. And then also tomorrow I'll be recording the Justice League, the Flashpoint Paradox with the Animation Brain Trust. And that will be in your feed now because the way time works. It wasn't great. I don't know what Ryan's going to think about it. I know Chris didn't like it. So it's been polarizing. I have a written review of both The Wolverine and Justice League Flashpoint Paradox on the site. And it's all over the place.
I believe the comic books that they were based upon were also polarizing.
Yes.
True.
By polarizing, I mean they were good for a while before they weren't.
It's all different things. There are people saying that I loved the comics and I don't like the movie. I didn't like the comics, but I love the movie. I didn't like either of them. I'm in the
camp. How do people remember?
Because
I don't remember how you felt about the comics.
You don't remember how I did?
I don't remember how you felt about the Flashpoint comics. No, I
didn't like them. I was very excited about the Canterbury Cricket.
I remember that. Didn't understand it.
Right. There's a little bit of irony going on there. I'll be honest.
I did pick that much up.
Let's go to the outro section.
Yeah,
let's do that.
Check out ifanboy.com for the pick of the week review and more in-depth comic book balls and all the important news and discussion topics. Go to ifanboy.com/about to see the staff of ifanboy and their social network links. Follow us on twitter.com/ifanboy and stay in touch on facebook.com/ifanboy.
You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 1-888-326-2697 with any questions, comments, concerns, discussion topics, etc.
That was a genuine laugh snort there, by the way. If you like us, you can write a review on iTunes. I really want to get to 40,000. So that's, you know, that if that's a number that helps you get to the goal and you think, oh, I haven't done it, 40,000 is where I need to be.
Yep.
On your way to the Frapper map.
Make that happen. Over at the iFan, the iTunes. See, the thing is, we named this around the time that the iMac came out. Mm-hmm. Anyway, better yet, be the word of mouth. I've actually been seeing a lot of people recommending the show on Twitter lately, and that's still really cool. I really
always appreciate that.
Yeah,
totally. So there you go. We did it, guys. We don't need Connor.
Nope.
We haven't liked him for a long time, so this is just the next logical step.
He'll be back next week, though.
Do you think he will listen to this?
I don't know.
A little of me goes a long way.
I did
way.
Just say I didn't like him and that he wasn't necessary.
Did you think he doesn't know?
I've put up a hell of a show for a long time. Lots of stuff. I saw him recently in person. And like,
oh, that's right. You left him around your child.
Yeah. They are size-wise very different.
I can well imagine.
It's bordering on opposite. But their heads are about the same size, so it's children are disproportionate, is what I'm saying. I'm in this car in my garage, and it's August. He's
driving to Mexico.
You didn't have to get in the trunk, is the thing. Like, yeah. You could have just sat.
It sounded the best
seats.
In there.
That's just bad planning.
That's it for this week's show. I'm Paul.
I'm Jim.
Hot as crap in here. I decided about the swear then. I don't know why.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.